Hey guys, welcome to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. Special one for you today. This is one of my favorite podcasts I've ever done. On Saturday morning, before Iowa State Baylor basketball, got to go and sit and talk with Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell for an extended period of time. Much of what you will hear here, much of what you didn't. And just it was a really laid-back atmosphere. We sat in the coach's meeting room. Really cool. I learned a lot. I got a lot more perspective about Iowa State's 8-5 season, but I think you will too. Today's podcast and all of our football coverage at CycloneFanatic.com, brought to you by our good friends at the Iowa Pork Producers. They've been awesome partners of ours in bringing you guys all this free coverage of the Iowa State football season in 2017. Today's podcast brought to you by Iowa Pork. Here's my sit-down conversation with Matt Campbell. All right, guys, we're podcasting today on a Saturday morning down here getting ready for Iowa State Baylor, big basketball game today, and hanging out with Iowa State head football coach Matt Campbell. Hey, Coach, what's up, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me, and just excited to have you around. Excited for a good basketball game today. Kind of in the throes of recruiting again, and obviously had our football team back starting school on Monday, so we're excited.
How's the recruiting gone?
Yeah, recruiting's really good. You know, we're with this new recruiting cycle, really interesting time this January cycle. We got about 3 weeks, and I'd say about 90% of our time is on this 2019 recruiting class,
yeah,
which is great for us. And, you know, probably the other 10% of it really trying to find ways to better our roster in this 2018 class. And so, you know, we kind of like those challenges, and we've laid a really good foundation. You know, our six-hour radius on this 2019 class is really, really good this year.
Well, that's good.
So we feel really comfortable with it.
I'm fascinated by the recruiting calendar. I think it was my days of working at Scout and Rivals back in the day that, but like it, to me, like it, was there any learning curve at all? Because it's like I watched Lane Kiffin do a press conference after his bowl game, and the next day was signing day, and it's like I know that you have to like work ahead with all this, and a lot of it's already done. It just seems to me like I'm so used to the February deal where it's like panic for the 5 days leading up to it. Did you feel that at all in December?
Yeah, well, I think you certainly did, because there was two mindsets. One, you're getting ready for a bowl game. Your own team is getting ready for finals and all those things that, you know, you've always put so much time and effort into it. And then, you know, the reality is, I think the number is somewhere around 97 to 96% of young student athletes that were offered Division I scholarships signed Division I scholarships. And they signed it in December rather than January. So, you know, I think really what we've all learned is the new signing day is now in December. And that is a challenge. It's a challenge when it comes. But I think it's only a challenge if you didn't do your due diligence and you didn't put your time and effort on the front end of it. And we were really fortunate. You know, we had 18 kids that signed during that time. And those are kids that had been committed to us for the long haul, and kids that, you know, we all were really, really excited about. So I know we felt comfortable. And the other thing it's done is it's kind of, you know, cleared the picture for this January period and anybody that you may want to go out and get in this 18 class, or, you know, better your 18 class somehow, some way. It's certainly cleared the picture. But I'm a big fan of it. I think it's big, and I know it's a grind for the staff, but I think it's a positive.
I've got five. So this is me as an outsider.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Go ahead.
I've got the five moments that defined the 2017 season.
Yeah.
And I wanted to run them by you.
Go ahead.
And you tell me if I miss anything.
All right.
Okay. I want to know about your meeting with Joel Lanning in the offseason.
Yeah.
You say, okay, I need you to play linebacker.
Yeah.
It goes how?
Well, you know, the starting part was an apology from my end that, you know, that West Virginia game. And I think me and you've talked about that before, that we get in the second half and nobody knows it more than I do, that one of our best players somehow, some way isn't affecting our game. And that really tore at me, you know, and I knew it, because I knew how much A, he loved Iowa State, and B, football was really important. I knew it was a really, you know, it was an uncomfortable and not the right situation. And I didn't have an immediate answer. If I would have during it, I would have made a change. So the first part of that meeting was an apology and saying, hey, I got to get this corrected. This is my responsibility. The second part of it was, you know, we're going to try you out at linebacker. What do you think? And, you know, his immediate response to that was what you would think. Coach, I just want to help the team. I'll do whatever you think that I need to do, but I want to play. And so my response to that was, you're going to be the first team linebacker. We're going to coach you as such. And if after spring practice that doesn't work out, you can't do it, or, you know, it's a situation that doesn't work, then I'll find a place for you to start, whether it's tight end, whether it's tailback. We'll figure that out. We'll find somewhere on the football field for you to impact this football team. What I don't want to do is lose Joel Lanning.
What I find funny about last spring, looking back at it, I had a lot of your guys, man, Williams, this guy's like going to be a really good linebacker.
Yeah.
I think you told me that too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, he's played quarterback for 4 years. These guys are feeding me crap.
Right,
they're just trying to get everybody pumped up about the season.
Yeah.
He's an All-American.
Yeah.
Did you ever even think that? I knew you thought he'd be good.
Yeah.
Somebody in your room, I don't remember who, told me he'll play NFL linebacker someday. Did you ever think he could be an All-American?
Yeah, I mean, to say that, that'd be a lie to say he's going to be an All-American at the end of it. But, you know, I don't forget this, too. I won't forget in media day last year down in – did say we had a darn good linebacking core. And I know you're kind of like – I felt like I got the Chris Williams, like, this guy's full of it. But
you did.
Yeah, I know I did.
I had a couple of follow-ups, too. I couldn't
couldn't let that go.
No, where are these guys coming from? But you were right. They were good.
You know, and that's the one thing that I from Joel, then to Marcel, you know, those two, what those two did for our football team, and you just talked the spring. I mean, one guy came out of nowhere, and then the other guy transitioned from quarterback to Mike linebacker. And the one thing both those kids have in common is they love football, and they love to get better. And those guys became the heartbeat of why, you know, our foundation, to why I thought we had a chance to have some success.
Yeah, well, it was fun to watch. I've, for the first time in my life, big Vikings fan here. Obviously a big Cyclone guy, and I've had two teams with great defenses.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting to me because I've covered the Big 12 for so long, where you come to really appreciate great offense.
Yeah.
And the Vikings teams, when they've been really good, it's usually because their offense, right? And I've watched for the first time in my like fan life, I'm sitting here looking forward to when the defense goes out on the field. It's been very refreshing.
Well, it was really, you know, one of those pieces for us that we felt like we had some really good pieces on the defensive side. We just didn't know exactly how those pieces were gonna fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like that was the one thing that we've all felt after going through the Big 12 the first time around, that if we can play good defense, we got a chance to be good in this conference. We've got a chance to really grow. And, you know, and I think, too, you got to realize that your whole team's got to complement that thought and that mindset, and that's just not saying, hey, we're going to run 100 plays on offense and we're going to be really good on defense, because still your defense is playing 100 snaps. I don't care how good you are. The numbers of being successful are going to go down drastically. And so I think that's the one thing, too, that we really were able to get to at some point during the season, was a complementary football team.
All right. Number two on my list. It's the post. It's after the Texas game. It's that Thursday night game. The defense was fantastic in that game. You guys had just switched to that three-man front. You had the bye week, and it was really, I thought, a turning point in your season.
Right.
A lot of people would say it a negative deal because the whole park week is coming up.
Right.
But you make the change on defense. It, you know, throttles you to being one of the best defenses in the Big 12. But that week. Talk me through, like, Thursday night at 10 o'clock until kickoff at Oklahoma. It had to be one of the more tumultuous weeks of your coaching career.
Well, you know, let's talk the change, because I think the change on defense maybe gets, you know, overlooked. That, let's talk about that, and I'll talk about Jacob. You know, we get done playing Akron, and for, you know, the second or third week in a row, we weren't great on third down defense. You know, we were trying to do the best of our ability, and I think that meeting on Sunday night as a staff defensively, we sat down and, you know, people that know me know the philosophy I constantly preach in our program is players, formations, plays. And, you know, who are your players? What formations, offense, defense, special teams are you going to get into? And then obviously, what plays are you going to run when you got to run something in a game? And one of the things that I give so much credit to our defensive staff is myself and us sitting in there and saying, how do we take this group that we have? We did a really good job of creating a foundation, a baseline, but now what gives us a chance as we go into Big 12 play to have success? If we keep doing what we're doing, mm-hmm. it's going to be a really long year, and we're going to have the same results that we had a year ago.
Well, in that Iowa game, like just the difference between your defense in that game compared to the Texas game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so one in why I said let's talk about this, we went into the Texas game, and as I watched our football team after the first drive, and you know we had, you know, Ding Dong Jaquan had the deal, which I thought was a huge piece of the game because it took the air out of the stadium a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, as I watched that game, there was a sense of confidence growing in me because I really felt like Texas was it defensively. I thought Texas. I've said this, I think me and you've talked about this multiple times. They're as good as any defense in terms of personnel and structure that maybe there was in the country this past year. I really felt like that. Mm-hmm. And I felt like offensively, even though Texas wasn't maybe the best that they've been on offense, I still felt like there was some really good weapons. And I watched this brand new defense come in and really give us a chance the entire game to win the football game. I knew after the game that really our lack of consistency at quarterback is what allowed us not to win the football game. Something was wrong. And I think, you know, if I was a fan on the outside looking in, I would feel that too, and I would know that. But I felt like that. And it was when you have that, you know that we're not living up to our full potential and something's wrong that you haven't identified yet, it becomes gut-wrenching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Jacob and I worked through that and, you know, that situation, some of those situations occurred and we were able to find out what the root of the problem was. A lot of people would say, well, you're crazy for thinking this way. But I'll be honest with you, you know, we've kind of had that feeling on Tuesday. We had a conversation before practice. It was raining that day. It was raining. I'm a little bit late coming out to practice. You know, the strength coach, they're out there stretching, getting ready mm-hmm. to rock and roll. And I remember coming through there saying, I know what's wrong now. I know how to fix it. And you know what? It was almost a re-energized me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I pulled Coach Manning aside because I think he was frustrated after that Texas game. And to be honest with you, if you go back and really study that game, I thought we had a really good game plan. If we just executed, it would have been fascinating to see what happened. And you know, that's why I knew we had a chance. And so Tuesday, Wednesday, and the thing that once our team – and you got to realize you can't trick 18 to 22 year old kids.
No.
They knew something was off too. And so once we figured out the problem and fixed it, you know, I think sometimes what coaches do is they don't want to fix it. Like, I think the one thing these kids trust about me now is like, if there's an issue, we're going to address it. Mm-hmm. We're going to put it out in the open. We're going to fix it. And it's all going to be the betterment of our team. I felt like our kids rallied around it. It was like one of those practices like that you have like when you're a kid, like it's raining, it's muddy out there.
It's fun.
And we had a blast. Like it was a great practice. We talked about the issue after practice Tuesday, Wednesday. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. When I went to bed Thursday night, like Wednesday night's my late night, like with our staff on offense and the quarterbacks, and we got out of here at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. I think our kids were confident, and not that I knew we were going to win the game, but one thing I really felt like is I felt like we were going to go play really good football. And we were going to have a chance to give ourselves a chance to win. And it's almost like I love that. I love when we're backed into a corner. And that's probably where we're at our best. And we've always been at our best. And, you know, I kind of felt that way. You know,
yeah,
I knew
yeah.
like, you know, we were trying to – I didn't want to tip our hand that Jacob wasn't playing just from a, you know, now what are they going to do? But I kind of like that too. Like, what the heck are these guys going to do? You know, and talk to Joel, you know, literally on Tuesday by the time Wednesday. And if you would have seen when we went for the first time, that's the first time that Joel had been back at quarterback, literally practicing quarterback. And it was a period at the end of Wednesday of practice. If you would have seen the juice and the energy that our kids had when he came back there, you would have said something special's got a chance to happen on Saturday. And that I'll never forget Tuesday's practice, and I'll never forget when he went back to quarterback for two periods of practice.
That's awesome.
The energy and juice that it kind of gave our team. And, you know, we go down to Oklahoma, and we fly in, and, of course, they put us, or Skip puts us, into a situation where we're literally staying on their campus. They're having official visits. And it's like, well, you know, like, damn, like, this everybody thinks we're going to get blown out, you know. And it was kind of like the
– Wait, you stayed in a hotel on campus?
On campus, yeah. Like, I told Skip's getting yelled at. Like, what are we doing? You know, like, and it
I
was,
never heard that part.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, but it was one of those situations where I think there was a quiet confidence about us going into that game. And, you know, for me, I never talk about winning, but I talk about playing to the best of our ability, that we all felt really confident that we could go play really good football. And I've always believed in this. Even last year's Oklahoma game, a year ago, I felt like we had every chance to win that game.
You guys were right there.
We're right there. Yeah. And so, you know, and to me, that's the difference that's finally happened here is, and that took about, it took us winning that game, but that our kids finally believe that they can win. And I felt like that was the thing when I got the job here, and I talked the kids, my initial meeting with our kids, I felt like they looked at me like I'm crazy, because I said I'm sick of the mentality around here being that, you know what, we're just going to go play good against the Baylors and the Oklahomas, like, because I think that was the mindset, and I think that was, hey, let's just go put on a good show. Like, and in the reality, you look at college football today, and it doesn't matter who you are or what you're playing. If there's 128 whatever Division I teams, everybody's got a chance every given Saturday, and that's true, and it's been proven over time. But we didn't have that belief, and that drove me nuts. And for the first time, you know, I felt like, obviously, we won that game. I felt like that was kind of the momentum starting to come into our program.
So Kempt gets the start, and I would venture to get, like, the people who read our stuff know who Kyle Kempt is, because they're the diehards.
Yep.
We've written about him before.
Yep.
We actually care about who the third string quarterback is.
Right.
I'm sick like that.
Right.
But I bet half your fan base, like the casual fans, had never heard of the guy.
Right, right.
And he goes out there, and he wasn't sharp. Mm. I think he threw a pick, didn't he? Or that first series? I don't know if it wasn't a pick, but it should have been a
play.
Pick.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, did you ever go, uh-oh?
Yeah. Now, you know what the thing about Kyle, and you know, we had a really good conversation that week, because, as you know, I think highly of Zeb. Zeb's got a lot of talent. And there was a position battle. Really, it was all fall camp, those two. And, you know, when this situation occurred on Tuesday, I brought them both in, and I just said, you know, we're gonna see how practice goes Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we'll sit down and we'll reconvene on Thursday. The thing that I've always loved about Kyle Kempt, he is the same guy every day. And here we are, we're going into Norman, Oklahoma, or whatever, underdog. Like, Kyle won't be fazed by it. Like, good or bad, whatever happens, Kyle will have the ability to handle all of it. And so, you know, and Kyle practiced well that week. And that my response to Zeb was like, listen, you still got to be ready. You got to be ready to rock and roll. I still need you to compete. We're going to go with Kyle in this game, and then we'll see what happens from there. And, you know, I do remember those first two series, because they weren't pretty.
No.
And literally the only thing that got us going, if you remember, in that game was a screen on the third series of the game to David. He was an incredible run. And then we kind of got some juice. We kind of got some momentum and some confidence in the game. And, you know, but the thing you love about Kyle is he never gets rattled. Like, never gets rattled. He accepts it. He learns it. He's got the ability in his own mind. I know I talk this word process all the time. He's got the ability to process by the second, you know, let alone, you know, some of us, it takes a day to process. Like, he's got that intangible. And I think that's what makes him really special. And I don't know if we knew that until, obviously, that game and how he handled himself.
Okay, before I move on to point three, your the three-man front.
Mm-hmm.
I've made this argument, and I've had a lot of people argue with me. I just want to throw it by you and see. You can be honest with me. You can tell me I'm stupid. I think Ray Lima was your team MVP this year.
Well, you and myself would have the same you know, belief system in terms of that guy's ability to do what he did. Production, and I think that's where so many people lose sight of it that aren't football guys or football people that understand schematics. What that guy had the ability to do, and so many times two-gapping, playing the A-gap, and literally you see our ability to stop the run. He's the difference. And the reason why I think we all were really confident in moving to a three-man front, because we said, man, we got a guy that can go in and play nose and literally two-gap for us and let those backers play free and be able to run sideline to sideline. And I would say you're right. I mean, I think if you asked our staff that question of why were we able to really piece together defensively what we wanted to be able to do, we were able to do it because Ray gave the ability, and he's still got the ability when we kick into a four-man front to slide over to a nose and be able to play a shade and at times play a three technique, and that's a pretty special dude to be able to do all those things. But you're right in that. I would second that in my opinion.
Yeah, I just don't – because I don't think it could be an offensive guy because the defense won so many games for you this year, and the way the defense was built, it can't work without that – two-gap guy.
No, and I would say between Lima and Montgomery because what you asked of David, and not so much from a fan perspective but from a coaching perspective, to hand the ball off the amount of times we did to him, the growth of it wasn't a dominant offensive line. It wasn't an offensive line that was seasoned. It was an offensive line that was growing. And what he did – and because that's how we want to play. We want to extend games, and we want to be able to do what we need to do in terms of, you know, we want to hand the ball off and want to have the ability to do that. And, you know, you and I have talked about this. One of the challenges of playing football the way we want to play football is the fact that we came into a really tough situation on the offensive line. It wasn't a lot of depth. We've had to build this offensive line from the ground up, and that's something that you can't shortchange.
Like, no.
If you're going to do it the right way and you're going to do it, then you got to start from scratch and you got to build it right. And we found a back that allowed us to still play the game and style of football we wanted to play, and yet maybe not have the exact pieces offensive line-wise that we wanted to have. So I think both those guys gave us the ability to play a style of football that gave us chances to win football games.
The Tech game was the David Montgomery game, in my opinion, because you had a lead.
Yeah.
And like, because last year you had Baylor and Oklahoma State, and you guys, you couldn't get a third and two.
No.
You know, and this year, like, your line wasn't necessarily a lot better, but you had, like, David could just get him on his own.
No, and I think that was big. And I think even in those games, the other guy that I can't shortchange credit to is Julian Goodjones moving to center. I think that move, some of those runs in critical situations came because of Julian's ability to really learn and grow.
Okay, point number three, the five moments that I feel defined your season. The first practice after you beat Oklahoma. I've heard stories. What was it like?
Oh, yeah. You know, we got after it.
Yeah.
You know, and I told our team right after the game, I mean, I was proud of them. I was excited. But I think having done and been in this journey, you know, and not the same scale but similar, when we were at Toledo, we beat Arkansas on the road. And, you know, we were teaching our team how to grow and how to handle success. And that was one thing I think I really learned through my experience then was we're gonna ratchet it up instead of scale it back. And, you know, I think our kids came out and we had a really good practice, but we got after it, you know, and it was a physical get after it, go. And literally it was the next day. And so I think that mentality, our kids embodied that. And obviously we were able to, you know, I think everybody was waiting for us to lay an egg versus Kansas, and I thought we came out and played on a day that allowed us to play well, but we came out and we played really good football that week.
Number four, I thought about going TCU here because it would have been the second win versus the top five, but I looking back at that game, I think a lot of people thought you guys could and would win that game. You took care of business. I want to go to just the entire bowl prep.
Yeah.
Because – there's two reasons I wanted to do this. I loved your quote. You take your bid to the Liberty Bowl, and you go up there and you're like, you know, some programs want to just strictly develop during bowl games. Some programs want to win bowl games. And I love that because one of the problems I've always had with Iowa State is, man, like I walk through and everything's beautiful, these great facilities. We don't have any trophies around here. You know, like we don't have any banners like we do in Hilton.
Right.
And I loved that. Yeah. I loved the fact that you just came out and were like, no, like this is a huge deal to us.
Yeah.
But still, I know that development is such a big deal. So the bowl practices, I think fans get a little tired of it because coaches talk about it a lot. But I know how big of a deal it was. Yeah. So what was that? How did bowl prep go for you guys?
Well, you know, I think twofold for us, you know, and I think knowing and from our fan base knowing this, that, you know, the month of November, and this is where our next step has to go as a football program, is, you know, we were worn down. I mean, it was my greatest fear because I was waiting for the shoe to drop on this football team, not because our kids cared or not because our kids didn't prepare, but like, you know, Joel Lanning playing over 1,000 snaps in a football season. Brian Peavy, 900. I think our best players are playing everything.
And you told me that before Baylor.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, and it was my greatest fear. So one of the things as we got into bowl prep was there's a drastic difference on our football team, and this is one of the challenges even for our team going into to this new season, is there's a group of guys that you had to protect. We had to get them healthy again. We had to continue to find ways to refine their skill sets, but yet – take great care of them, help them out, help them get what really football took out of them for the last 3, 4, 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then yet these young guys who had all this skill set and ability to grow and get better. So, you know, our mindset was for the first 2 weeks, we were going to do a really good job of pouring the reps and times. We didn't even know our opponent, to be honest with you, the first 2 weeks of bowl prep, that we were going to put all of our time and effort into development. You know, let our seniors kind of, you know, and some of those guys that played major reps, you know, come be a part of it, but really kind of sit by the wayside. And then once we found out who were going to, you know, go play, everything changed. The mindset completely changed. And it said, let's go win this thing. And what are we going to do to put in a game plan? You know, we had a really good week of practice before we left for Memphis. You know, I gave our guys finals off, gave them about 9 days. If they wanted to get home. A lot of our guys were able to do that. But then we came back that Tuesday before we left and had a normal week of practice as almost we were playing that weekend, put the entire game plan in, had our really heavy practices back home. And then we got on the plane on Christmas Day, and then which was our normal day off. And then when we got down there, we shortened the practices, which was good because it was a little chilly down there and some of those practices anyways. But, you know, I felt like it would keep our kids' attention. And I thought our kids – one of the neat things about not playing a bowl game in a while here, where I think our kids were number one driven, but number two, I think there was a great intention to detail in terms of how we were preparing for the game.
Did that atmosphere just blow you away? I thought that was one of the coolest sporting events I've been to is the Liberty Bowl this year.
And I'll be honest with you, Chris. It was one of the most magnificent and amazing experiences that I've been a part of in coaching. And, you know, I've said this, and I continue to just be so unbelievably grateful for what the people that support our program in this university do for us. And that pep rally that we had on Friday, and if you know Matt Campbell's not a big pep rally guy, like, but to be honest with you, like, for our kids and our players and that atmosphere there, like, it sent chills down your spine just seeing these people that were willing to come drive, support you, and be a part of it. It was unbelievable. And then to be able to reward them on Saturday.
Yeah.
But I walked out Saturday before the game, and it was just like, and there were times in the game you're just looking around, and it's like, this is really special. This is unique. And then to be able to put a stamp on it was huge.
The fifth and final, and this is the defining moment of the season, in my opinion, the fumble. The fumble, not fumble, whatever we want to call it.
Right.
I think that most honest Iowa State fans, when that happens, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buckle up.
Yep. Yep.
And supposedly you were like down on the sideline saying like, no, I hope our defense goes back out. I don't believe that you actually wanted that, by the way.
Right.
But like the sentiment of these guys buckling up when they did. And, man, like, what a perfect way for that group to go out.
Yeah. Well, to me, one of the hardest things, you know, the Texas stuff, that's football. That happens. That's part of it. One of the most gut-wrenching things that's maybe happened to me or I've been a part of is the Kansas State game.
Yeah.
And I'll be really honest with you. Like, me being able to sleep and think that that's how this team that sacrificed everything to change our program and to have the same mindset you just said about, and then it happened, where we changed that at times through the season. We've had moments where we stopped that mentality, but that's the way the season ended. It literally, I don't know if I slept since that Kansas State game before we went, because I it was like, and as a coach, those moments are going to happen. Adversity is going to happen. You couldn't control it. And I remember feeling like it was an out-of-body experience. Like, I was so mad at myself going back after that game. Like, what could I have done differently to rally? Because I felt like it on our sidelines. Like, when that went down, it was like, man, these guys – And it wasn't just one call. It was three, four calls, right? Like, and it was
four,
like,
of them, actually.
And yeah, four of them.
I've watched the game like four times, trust me.
but the reality of it was, I did say, I pulled our defense and I pulled our offense. And you can go back on the video. Like, I looked at it and I said it, because I wasn't even thinking, do we get the fumble or not? Like, I already knew what the call was.
Yeah, it was
in my gut. I knew what was going to happen, and I said that to this defense. I said, listen, like, here's the deal. This call's going to go against us, and I hope the hell it does go against us, because I want to leave this season, and I want to make up for not doing it the right way from my end and from your end and from our end and this fan base's end. We're going to change this thing once and for all. And I hope the hell it does go against us. And I said it, and I did mean it. Like, now, do I wish we were up by 8 points? Yeah, I mean, anybody with a sense did. But, like, I wasn't thinking like that. Like, the reality was
that I wanted no way it. You guys were getting that call.
No, but I did. I wanted that challenge for this team, because I felt like we had the guys in that room that knew, because – for me, I never let it be, even after the Kansas State game, like, even that next day in our team meeting, we couldn't control that. But when we had the ability to control it, we didn't. And whether it's coaches or players, I'm going to put it on me. It's my fault, and it starts with me. But we had plays to control the controllables, and damn it, we didn't.
Yeah.
And now, look at this. Here we are, end of the season, last drive of the season. We got a chance to fix. And that's what this team did. That's what made this team really special, is they learned, they grew, they had failures. We had opportunities where we didn't do what we needed to do, and then we learned from it. And then the next time those challenges came our way, we did it. That was what was fascinating about this year's football team, that all our successes came off learned experiences that happened before, that we were humble enough. We didn't let our ego get in the way. We didn't point, bitch, whine, blame other people. We literally understood it, and we had the ability to get better from it. And that was the pinnacle to me of why it was great to win the bowl game. I'm with you. We want trophies. Like, we don't even know where the hell to put the trophy around here right now, to be honest with you, because they didn't build trophy cases in here, which ticks me off, right? But the reality of it is,
it's a sweet looking trophy.
It's an unbelievable trophy. We're gonna start building trophy cases around here finally.
Love it.
You know, but the reality of it becomes, you know, how we did it gives us a chance now to move forward in our football program and say, you know, I was able to sleep now because I knew it ended the way that this group had sacrificed to be able to end it the right way. So to me, it was the best ending that could ever happen for this group of seniors and for this 2017 football team, because to me, we had to prove that we had the ability to win those type of games. And you know what? Those are games when you continue to grow your program that you got to be able to win grinded out games. You know, not every game is going to be won by 40 points, and I get it. It's probably not always going to be that way for us. We got to be able to win those games, but now we got experiences to go back on and say we can do it.
I think that fourth quarter in Memphis is, like, to me, that's like the kind of the that's probably the most iconic like Iowa State moment for me. I think some old school guys maybe have some, but like just everything that you just laid out, like the atmosphere. You know, you're on the other team's. It's a road game.
But the
Iowa State crowd was phenomenal. Like the way I summed it up was Iowa State's fans were like hell bent on drowning out the Memphis fans, and then they were pissed that all these Iowans had invaded, you know, their home. It's just. What a time. Did you know? I don't know if you know this. So we did a game watch the night before for the basketball game. And I got it. We were at Jerry the King Lawler's place. Did you know this?
No, I didn't know this.
The King came.
Oh, see.
I didn't know if you knew this.
No. See, and that's my issue, Chris, is everybody thinks these bowl games are fun. They're fun for everybody but the coaches, you know? And there you get an opportunity to see the King. I would have loved that.
Look at me and the King right there. Picture of me and the King.
Oh. See, if I would have known the King lived down there, we could have had him give like a pregame speech.
And he totally would have done it.
Oh,
he loves
goodness.
Iowa State fans.
Is that, well, who wouldn't?
No,
who
wouldn't?
Yeah.
They drank all of his beer.
Unbelievable. Now what's the King do? He owns a bar down there.
Yeah, he owns a bar. It's like a barbecue place.
Yeah, yeah. And well, that's disappointing. There's another issue with Skip.
So, I wanted to find a place for a game watch because Beale Street's so insane. Like, it's all music. Nobody can watch games down there. And the only place I would find was the King's place.
Yeah.
And they let like 200 of us or 100 of us go down to the King's personal like VIP lounge.
Unbelievable.
And we watched the game there. And then the King showed up.
Yeah. See, I'm jealous that I missed that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. No, it was great. Do you have time for like a few fan questions?
Yeah. Let's.
I won't tell you. We've been here a long time. I don't want to. A couple of fans just wanted to ask a question. I'll ask the best ones. Kareem Hunt versus Montgomery, as far as pro prospects, is Montgomery like where is he at compared to where Kareem was?
Yeah, I think they're very similar. You know, you look at their statistically what they've done in their first 2 years, and I think you look at mentality. One thing both guys have is they've got an elite love for the game of football. I think David's got probably at a younger age maybe a greater work ethic. Kareem was one of those guys that was blessed with, you know, phenomenal breakaway speed. And, you know, I think the thing, though, the parallels to both of those guys are their absolute love when they get between the white lines, maybe as unique of a love. And the neat thing about both guys, if you came to practice at Toledo and watched Kareem Hunt practice on Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, he was the guy that was separating. We almost had to hold him back because he was like separating safety shoulders, you know, at practice because he didn't care. David's the same guy, you know. Yeah, and so I that part, I think there's a lot of parallels to those two.
You're a Browns fan, right?
As big as they get.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're the Browns GM right now. You had the number one pick. Who do you take?
Well, you got to find a quarterback. I mean, to me, that's the major issue, and I don't know if I have enough wisdom or have studied those college quarterbacks out there.
All right, I'll give them to you. You got Darnold.
Yeah.
You got Rosen.
Yeah.
And you got the kid from Wyoming.
Wyoming, right? Yeah. I think you find out. To me, it's about accuracy in that league. Like the windows get so small so quick, and you know, and I think what we found is intelligence, you know, and leadership ability. You need somebody that's got enough swagger about themselves and confidence about themselves that they can go in and fix it. Their issue, though, is they've revolving door of 800 quarterbacks, but they haven't understood that you got to build it from the outside to that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, from the offensive line to a running game to receivers, you know, the poor kids playing last year, and we got no receivers, you know. And so I think that, you know, really good hire at GM, but I think organizationally they got to really go back and they got to figure it out from the ground up, and they got to make some really good. Whoever they do draft, they better put some pieces around them to be successful.
Last question here, and I know that you're going to laugh at this, but I got from like five people, so I have to ask it. They want to know about uniforms next year. Is it going to get nuts?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be totally new, you know, and I think everybody will be really excited about it. The neat thing is, hopefully, that's not the greatest buzz going in the next football season like it was when I got here.
Yeah, what were you like when you get here and like we're all just what song are you guys gonna walk out to?
Well, I appreciate it. At least there was, you know, there was some excitement. But
you gotta understand though, Matt, like for so many years, the highlight of game day
right
was tailgating and right. watching the team run out there. Right. And then after the first quarter, everybody would go back out to the lots.
No, like, I get it. I get it. Yeah, I back to the uniform piece a little bit is we are excited, you know, and I appreciate Nike wanting to invest into us. You know, we'll stay traditional in some sense, but, you know, I think the opportunity to give a really good look for our football team and our program going forward. Let me ask you this. Do you like the helmets?
Oh, those are awesome, man.
Yeah.
They looked great on TV, too.
Yeah, I did. I thought they looked
sharp. I thought they looked awesome in the stadium, but I thought they looked even better on TV.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think just finding ways to continue to make our program, you know, as we continue to grow, winning ultimately takes care of everything, but continuing to find kids, you know, ways to be interested in what's going on and continue to market ourselves and build this thing the right way, I think really important to all of us.
There you go. That's the answer, though, to your Browns. Just get better uniforms.
Yeah. You can't keep wearing, like, the orange, right? Holy smokes.
If they get, like, you know, like, neon, like, Hunter orange.
Yeah, right.
With some, like, spice the thing up, then you're going to win football games.
Yeah, or
it doesn't matter who your quarterback
even
is.
Give them I know they're the Browns, but give them a little black or something. You know, I say they can figure it
out.
You
love the black.
I like black. I think it does something for a uniform.
I do too.
Yeah,
I'm right there with
you. So that might be, you know, we'll see what happens.
Thanks,
we'll
bud. I appreciate your time.
All right, thanks for
more than you know.
Well, then, I appreciate your support.
Enjoy the quote unquote off season.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're excited. A great, challenging offseason, but great opportunity in this offseason for this football program. So I really look forward to it.
Perfect. I will put it.